Thank you, Sharon. Again, nutrients are going to be the contaminant of interest today in my talk. I'm going to deal mainly with the temporal variability, in this case the difference between Canadian prairie snowmelt and rainfall-induced runoff. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, mainly part of the South Tobacco Creek Webs group from the University of Manitoba and Agriculture and Agri-Food Canada. The Webs group wouldn't have been possible without the Deerwood Soil and Water Management Association. They're a producer organization that really got water quality research started in the area. And I'd also like to acknowledge the Webs postdocs, Lee Sheng and Kevin Thiessen, both of whom I'm going to use some of their data today. I'd also like to mention the Plot Scale Research Group at the University of Saskatchewan, my collaborator there, Charles Millay, and two of our graduate students, Sumith Priyafansha, and Jean Chen. Jean's first name is actually trickier still, but she goes by Jean, so that's much easier. And I'd also like to acknowledge your technical support. So how I'm going to approach this is that I'm going to look at the variability at a variety of different scales. But first I want to just define what I mean by snowmelt on the Canadian prairies. On the prairies, snowmelt is an annual event which occurs every year, usually from late March, early April. At the edge of field, it may last 2 to perhaps 4 days. And then in a small agricultural watershed, it will be a longer event as all the water mixes, lasting probably about 8 to 10 days as a maximum. And during this period, all of the snow that's accumulated on the landscape from October through March melts out in a single event. This event takes place over deeply frozen soils, so that means there's not much opportunity for infiltration or for much particle dislodgement during the snowmelt process. So that makes it quite different from rainfall-generated runoff. And I should also mention that snowmelt accounts for almost 80% of our surface water recharge, even although the proportion of precipitation that falls as snow might be as low as about 25%. So we see far more recharge from snowmelt because of the long travel distances and the low infiltration rates. Other important features are that during snowmelt, the biota are far less active. They're in a dormant period. And there is also some potential for nutrient release due to the freeze-thaw cycles in the fall and the spring during snowmelt, which may contribute or make snowmelt different from rainfall. This slide just shows the kind of variability that we see between snowmelt on the top here and rainfall, and this is just looking at flows. So what you see for rainfall, you have a very typical hydrograph. With the event, this is in a small watershed, about 70 square kilometres, and the event lasts about 40 hours, so a little less than 2 days for the total runoff. Whereas the snowmelt event is a lot more complex, lasting 200 hours, so getting up 8-9 days here. And we see a lot of fluctuation, and this is due to diurnal temperature variations generating pulsed runoff during snowmelt. And if we look at this, summing all the flow up into total runoff, we've got snowmelt in the blue and rainfall in the green. We see that over time we have quite a lot of variability in the amount of snowmelt we get. Very low flow years, very high flow years. But generally we see snowmelt dominating the runoff. In more recent years we've had some quite wet summers and relatively more summer runoff. So if these sort of trends continue, we may have to somewhat revise the 80% being due to snowmelt. But on the long-term average, it's definitely about 80% or greater. So I'm going to start at the lab bench scale and look at some snowmelt simulations that I conducted. So basically, I layered soil with residue on top and then snow on top of that, and subjected that to a typical melt scenario. So going from taking them, deeply freezing them to start with, and then going from -5 to +5 on a diurnal cycle over a 4-day period to result in meltout. And what we saw in the lab was very much the same as what you see in the field. You see a ripening of the snowpack in the first melt cycle, coming down to very crystallized snow, that's all the snow that's left by the final melt cycle. So I performed these simulations on the residues and soils alone and also in combination. Here's some of the results. I know my talk said that I was going to be dealing with nutrients, but it's actually going to boil down pretty well to phosphorus because I don't have time to talk about everything. But phosphorus is a very good example. So this is just showing phosphorus release in kilograms per hectare for different residue types. And as we move from left to right along this axis, we're looking at vegetation that is quite green and actively growing at time of freeze-up, and moving along to wheat stubble and flax stubble that were quite dry and senesced at time of freeze-up. So obviously the freshness of the residue is contributing to how much nutrients they contribute to snow melt. How does the amount contributed by residues relate to what we would see from soil under the same conditions? This slide, again, is nutrients in runoff, and we're looking at wheat residue. So if you remember, that was at the extreme right end of the previous slide. So this is very low producing residue, but you can see it's still the residues still account for about 3/5 of the total nitrogen and about 1/3 of the phosphorus. So if we look at that in relation to the very high producing residues, certainly the residues have way more potential to produce nutrients than the soil does. And actually, when we look at the two in combination, we often see that that nutrients released from the residues are actually taken up by the soils, and the combination is less than the two when they're run separately. So I'm going to move up to a plot scale here, and this is Jean Chen's work, and it is very much just your standard rainfall simulation on a 1 meter square plot. The rainfall rate was about an inch per hour, which is a 25-year return period storm, but this is Saskatchewan data, and those are pretty well, there's very few storms that actually produce rainfall runoff in Saskatchewan, so we went to a high-end, quite erosive storm for this. We generated 20 millimeters of runoff with very low phosphorus loads and concentrations, just because the runoff was very rapid and there wasn't much time for interaction with soil. And the dissolved to total phosphorus load here is a very low ratio, so a large proportion of particulates due to the erodibility. The snowmelt work was done in situ. The plots are actually up here in this area, so we had taken great care not to disturb those areas. All the disturbance was done down below, and runoff from the plots was captured down below. So it was a natural snowmelt event, 70 millimeters of snow water equivalent melting out in a 3-day period, generating 50 millimeters of runoff. The concentrations and loads are quite a bit higher here, and the dissolved to total phosphorus ratio, you can see, is way higher. So most of the snowmelt load was in the dissolved form. For my edge of field example, I'm taking work from the South Tobacco Creek Web Study. This was work that's been published by Kevin Thiessen, one of our postdocs. And again, this study was basically a paired watershed study looking at conservation tillage versus conventional tillage on roughly 5-hectare watersheds. And the data I'm showing are dissolved phosphorus to total phosphorus ratios for snow and for rainfall runoff. As you can see, in each case, the snowmelt value is greater than the rainfall value. And it's a little bit interesting to see that when we compare conventional till to conservation till, we see a higher ratio for the conservation till. Now, this is partly due to success in the conservation tillage, reducing particulate transport, but also the conservation tillage tended to increase the dissolved fraction due to near surface accumulations, both in residue and soil. When we look at the rainfall, we don't see this pattern, and that's really just an artifact of the hydrology, because under conservation tillage, it took larger rainfall events to actually generate runoff. So what we're seeing is only the erosive rainfall events that are contributing, that we have water quality data for. So we end up with quite a low ratio here, just because we're dominated by the erosive events. At the farm scale, again, I'm going to look at the work of one of our postdocs, in this case, Li Sheng. Here we were looking at a 200-hectare watershed where we had applied 5 different beneficial management practices. The data here represents medians of runoff events. So we're not looking at annual numbers or totals here. We're just looking at medians of individual events. But again, we're looking at the dissolved phosphorus to total phosphorus ratios. And if you look at snowmelt here, we see we've got higher ratios, greater dissolved components than we see in the rainfall-generated runoff. It's also interesting to look at the pre-BMP period and post-BMP period. We see in each case we've increased the ratio by the application of the BMPs. So the BMPs have been successful in reducing the particulates, not quite so successful in reducing dissolves. And my final scale is moving up to the full 75-kilometre square watershed. And again, snowmelt, we're looking at being much higher ratios of dissolved to total, with the exception of 2003 in particular here. That was a very low flow year. Rainfall being smaller ratios. Now, if we look at the scale here, we're seeing that we're no longer actually dominated by the dissolved forms. The particulates are, in most cases, almost equal to the dissolved, even during snowmelt. And that's because our stream flows off an escarpment before it reaches the outflow of the watershed. And what we're seeing there is a result of a lot of stream bank erosion and slumping on the stream banks, contributing particulates. So throughout all of the scales that we looked at, definitely less particulates in snowmelt, more dissolved nutrients. Probably due to the less energy of the snowmelt process, the fact that it occurs over frozen soils, and the potential contribution of nutrients from freeze-thaw cycles. The implications here are for development of beneficial management practices. Practices that deal with particulates only will be helpful to some degree, but we really need a way of dealing with dissolved nutrients in snowmelt. Okay, I probably don't have time for questions. Thank
15
you.
15 minutes of time.